All right, this is Jason Nimro. You're listening to probably a scratchier version of Cohen Meander. It's Monday morning, normal, exciting run to work, and Sandy, the Mitsubishi Mirage, is in the shop right now. Transmission issues, which I just think have to do with transmission fluid running out. It's sure acting like that might be its problem. Anyway, and so I'm in a different vehicle. I didn't transfer everything over very well, so this is a little bit more tricky. I'm just not using the equipment I normally use, so the sound quality is not going to be as good as it typically is. I've been thinking and writing a little bit. It'll come out as a blog post at some point soon, probably kind of a short one, about inborn temptations. Now, when I say inborn, it's stuff that we can say, you know, if you want to say you were born with this, fine. These are a lot of things. Disabilities. Is it congenital that says that you were born with it and that you'll continue to have it? You know, it's... Anyway. I've always had this inborn, and it may be influenced by what's happened to me. You know, I have a daughter who's decided to be a transgender. I've been around a very few, honestly, people who decide to express themselves as gay or something like that. I never really intended to be influenced at all by the LGBTQ community. You know, I've always been in a really off-the-wall places, to the point to where I didn't really run into these kinds of people. These are the sorts of situations that people with more time on their hands than is probably decent explore and get ensnarled in. And that's definitely the way I think of it. So it expands beyond this. Most people just have to do what they can do with the life they've been given, and they try to make themselves a decent member of society. Well, our society has become so decadently rich is probably a bad word. It's found increasingly creative. I'm starting to get politically correct. Increasingly creative ways of giving ourselves a lot of free time. And the big test of our times, and it could be the test of all times, because honestly, I don't think it has to do with being rich. I think it has to do with having disposable resources. Now, that often looks, that often is rich or looks rich. And I'm one of the people that has this stuff, this ability. Pardon me. So the big question is, with the time that you have, what do you do with it? And mine is mostly thinking about things, reading a little, not reading a whole lot at all. Creating this content. One of my biggest things to my children, and I'm really grateful for what they do. Now, I want everybody to be doing something that doesn't just make them miserable, but also something that can accomplish things that they want. I always wanted children who were more productive than consumptive. If you spend a lot of your time, you know, farting around, there's probably useful things to come out of, like, playing video games, especially ones that are a little more challenging. I don't know how creative that is. And I'm kind of a bit more into creativity than I am into spending time. Now, it's better than just simply, I don't know. It seems like almost everything has kind of a redemptive potential. I don't know at what point these things stop being redemptive. I think it really has to do with you're an active participant in what you consume. You know? And I'm not saying I'm some kind of paragon on any of this at all. I am, my tendency to get influenced by tawdry things, I think, is right up there with the worst elements. So I have to actively make choices not to do something that will bring me down, that will separate me from the Holy Spirit. And so we all come with some baggage. My take on it is that you can't really blame, like, say, for instance, God for this. Um, He is really more of a person who is giving us an opportunity and has been giving us opportunities, things to do. Wanting to be like him. We keep getting, you know, and you come back to that. And some people think they want to do that. And then you find out that they really don't. And you go, are they bad people? And you go, it's an interesting idea as to say, you know, what constitutes good or bad. The only thing that constitutes good or bad is Christ saying, I've bought you with the price of his suffering and atonement. He takes upon himself your punishment, and then he will exact his price later. This is all about giving us a probationary period. It was important. This was part of the plan from the beginning. It wasn't like all of a sudden Jesus decided to be a really nice guy. Not that he did not actually do that. He said, I'll be the one to do this. And God the Father said, okay, you're the guy that's going to do this. Good deal. Thank you. Does that make it better than everybody else? Absolutely. Does that make him God's favorite? Absolutely. But does that mean he has to actually go through the garbage? Absolutely. Is it hard? Yes. Should you respect him for it? Absolutely. Anyway, so we all come with baggage. Now, some of it just comes circumstantially. Like, I think most physical and mental disabilities are just conditions of mortality, just this world. Just like Christ said, I will go and I will do this, I will be born into that circumstance. It was a decision among potential choices. And all of us kind of take on that situation. We all kind of know ahead of time what we're going to get thrown here. And we're here. On earth. Alive. So, our circumstances are a whole lot at least agreed to before we came. We were all pushing for something better. The people who really didn't want anything better, they're not even here. They didn't get the chance for mortality. They didn't take the opportunity. They wanted to go in a different direction, and that's pretty much it. They're not wonderful, happy people. And so there is a lot of difficulties here that are caused by the fact that there's evil out there, and it is evil, vengeful, nasty. And it's here. Now, the people aren't here. The conditions are. Those people did not get bodies. They aren't terribly influential. They are influential, but it is they don't have any ability to actually overpower you. They can't overpower you. You have to give in to them. You have to let them be the influence in your lives rather than better things like God, Jesus Christ. Those who are working for them, which I hope to be among that group. And so when I think about the LGBTQ sorts of people who allow themselves to be heavily influenced by demons, by beings from the spiritual realms, given over to destruction, mostly personal destruction. This has to do with people, you know? Cities can rise and fall. You can have a nice house or a cruddy house. You can have a nice family or not a very nice family. It really doesn't matter. But it really becomes what happens to you given this. I am not a fan of the concept of fairness. If you're wanting fairness, you're already on the road to having evil controlling your life, running your circumstances. Don't even worry about fair. You know, oh, I'm so, you know, I remember this one young fella. I was a missionary in Tooele, Utah. And we had been invited to give a presentation at the local release time seminary. The kids actually get a period out of their school day that they can go in and get religious instruction. Since Utah has always been predominantly Latter-day Saint, this is something that was put into law. They, you know, public schools, you can't have these kinds of classes on the public school campus, but you can have it in a building that's pretty close. In fact, it's usually adjacent to a public, like high school. And the kids go over to this seminary building. It's called seminary. And it becomes kind of a gathering place for the LDS kids. Same thing as, like, we also have institutes, which are usually tied to universities, run basically the same way. So we were in Tooele, Utah, and there's a seminary there tied to the local high school. There's only one. And I don't know why they were having some kind of a big gathering there, but we did. We talked, and apparently it fell on kind of interesting ears. There was this one young fellow with a wheelchair, in a wheelchair, you know, and he was saying that he had been in this wheelchair since he was a baby, and he had always heard about faith and how if he had faith with the grain of mustard seed. My companion and I may have even referred to this. And he was really asking the deep question, I feel like I have great faith. Why on earth am I still having, how come I'm not healed of this malady so I can walk around like other people? And I guess the first question is, the first response would be, I don't know. You know, since you really talk to God about that, all I'm doing is preaching the information that I have and that I put stock in, I put my faith into. And I think that's something good to say. Everything about the gospel has really practical aspects to it. And often when we say things, you know, like people say, I've got such a strong testimony, and it's like, wow, why do you think that you're the person that gets to grade that testimony? In what world do you get to be that judge of how you are, you know? So when somebody says they have great faith, it's like, you know what, you're not really the arbiter of it. You don't get to pluck down like the great faith gold piece that you fashioned and demand whatever you're after, healing or things like that. You have to approach it differently. It doesn't mean that you don't strive to have faith, because it is. This is faith. Faith makes most of this stuff work. Makes most of this happen. Anyway, so here was this young guy in this wheelchair, and you know, I was a young missionary, I didn't really know what to say. And you don't want to just say to him, well, you know what? This is, if you have not been healed yet, you should probably figure out what your faith stance is. Can I be honest about a lot of these wheelchair-bound people? We gush all over them and say how wonderful that they are. And nice cultures do this. And I think it really plants in the mind of that like wheelchair bound person how absolutely fantastic they are. And how everybody should show them great deference. And so I think they kind of expect that from God. God's like, you know, says, I'm sorry. You know, everybody loves you. Oh, you're so wonderful. Even if they're kind of crabby or, you know, have attributes that if you didn't have a handicap, that people would go, you know what, you need to be a little more grateful for what you have. And it's not everybody else's job to praise you up and down and pat you on the head and tell you how fantastic you are. Far too many people today, and this really ends up being the wonderful thing, or the, no, it's not wonderful, anyway, but it isn't the marvelous, I don't know what I'm saying, sorry. I make these recordings just so I can think about these things, and talking is certainly nowhere near my skill. I definitely end up, I think, writing a little bit better than that. So I think my skill ends up being in writing, although do I need to work on it? Sure. Anyway, people think that if they're told how wonderful they are, they are going to by nature have all these marvelous attributes. And I'm guessing this kid in the wheelchair, the fact that number one, he was bringing this up and not just moving on with the life he had and doing wonderful things with what he had, which is what we're all expected to do, no matter if we are in a wheelchair or disabled or anything like that, does. You know, and it can be easy to say, oh, well, it's because they're in a wheelchair, because they endure great suffering. It makes them this amazing person. And a lot of able-bodied people use this as an excuse for why some really amazing handicapped people why they, you know, if I was in a wheelchair and I had all, you know, and I had to endure that suffering, I would be that better person too. And you go, you don't even have that problem and you're not that kind of a person. To be driven to being a wonderful person by your circumstances is, it makes you kind of grateful for the circumstances that you have that impel you to do better. And everybody thinks that that's kind of natural. I don't think it is. I think it's much more natural to be grumpy about these things. Although, anyway. So, I started taking that kind of thing. Well, I did. Society does. Takes those kinds of ideas and applies them to, I consider them somewhat voluntary problems. Now, people can say that same-sex attraction is something that they were born with and that they will struggle with. You know, oh, wouldn't my life be easier if I didn't have... If I'm a guy and I have the hots, I have infatuation, I go for other guys, and they treat it like a wheelchair. And that you're allowed to behave in different ways because of your circumstances. You know, I don't have to live up to God and society, old society. I have to call it old because our society doesn't say this anymore, and it's quite sad. I don't have to live up to those expectations. So I shouldn't be held to that kind of standard. I should be able to do what makes me feel good. And especially, I should be given the respectability that people who keep God's commandments against their nature. So that's the big thing about this, is the concept of the natural man. And the scriptures are quite pointed about that you have to overcome the natural man, doing what naturally comes to you, and instead doing things you should be doing, or things that Christ has asked you to do, the Messiah. Keep the commandments. Make commitments. Make covenants with him, so that he can bless you further. These are the people who want the blessings without doing what is required to get the blessings. And you go, well, I don't understand, you know, I'm just being true to myself. You know what? Being true to yourself is embracing the natural man. Whatever that is, I'm in a wheelchair, therefore I'm entitled to be grumpy. I'm entitled to be mad a lot and to be frustrated all the time and to take it out on everybody. You know, and you go, well, to a certain extent, I guess, whatever. We don't have to be around you. I don't have to personally do anything for you. I'm kind of a respectability guy. which means you have to get respect from other people. I cast just basic common decency as that, basic common decency. The whole love your neighbor as yourself, I have translated into the golden rule. Treat other people as you would like to be treated. That's one of the, I guess that's an interpretation of it. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, don't dig a pit for your neighbor. Don't smack somebody when they're down. You don't want to do that. You want to try to lift them up. That would be Christ-like, don't you think? And, you try to apply that in a lot of circumstances. Christ didn't say that. You should make sure that indecent people don't end up doing something to go to jail, or they shouldn't be punished for it. Everybody should have big excuses. You know, well, he had a bad family, therefore we shouldn't punish the fact that they go out and steal things. That they go out and steal and rape and do all these other things. And the same thing applies to the LGBT community. You know, they say that they should get special dispensations for things because, you know, I feel like I'm this way. I've got same-sex attraction. You go, yeah, so what? And you go, I see this guy, and he's got, you know, he has to live on crutches for his whole life. He still has standards he has to meet. Decency. Commandments that he has to keep. The fact that he's using crutches isn't a sin. But what kind of a person is he could constitute blessing or sin, or does constitute blessing or sin. I had problems as a younger man, and I was searching for exemptions from life. And I tried to use autism as a potential exemption from life, mostly to get on United States federal disability. And there's no reason for it. I can conduct myself. I can make money for my family, and I do quite well. But I've got a lazy streak. That's one of my larger problems. And I have to actively work against that nature of mine and don't put myself into bad quarters. Don't get a reputation being this way. So when it comes to LGBTQ people, who are currently little darlings, to the point to where, boy, you better not ever say anything bad about them, ever. And if they want you to behave a certain way, you better snap to it. And they get to judge you. And it's okay. It's the oppression Olympics, as it's sometimes referred to. You know, I am winning a gold medal for being the most depressed person in the room. And it's not working, particularly. Although it is, you know. He said, how much of our culture has changed when they say DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's always hilarious because they always make reference to it like race or ethnicity or stuff like that. And you go, you know what? This has really very little to do with that. Things that have obviously been seen as we can't judge and separate people by these things. The most hilarious thing is these days, and I'll just say something really politically incorrect, black people want to segregate themselves from others. It isn't that evil people that think that they're better than a black person is oppress them. I'm not saying that there aren't such people around. I said, but there aren't very many these days. Society did a pretty good job of putting the kibosh on those people. Those people are not respected in society. I think it's funny where we're supposed to respect everybody, and that's not true. We don't respect everybody. Otherwise, we would be as respectful to the bigot as we are to some aggrieved, oppressed person. You know, we would respect them, and we don't. And you go, you know, you guys are playing this. It is. It's the oppression Olympics. I get special perks that other people are not allowed to have, and it's all due to my having been oppressed. I always bring up the people who have overcome great hardships. What's a good example? Helen Keller. We don't really talk much about Helen Keller anymore because it's not useful to talk about people who really did overcome things, because it makes people who want to be treated as oppressed people, it makes them feel bad because they don't deserve that kind of praise, honestly. And false praise, everybody knows that that's hollow. I'm horrible this way. I don't accept other people's praise particularly. I usually just say thank you and aren't you nice just to get them to stop. Because it is. It's like I don't want to hear it. I think Jesus was among these sorts. Somebody tried to butter him up. You're so wonderful. You're so amazing. And he said, I'm not amazing. Why do you even call me good? God is good. I'm just doing what I was sent here to do. I'm just here to do what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, that is an active trying to fight pride, which is something that a lot of people fall into, is being prideful. I'm all this, and I deserve this, and aren't I great? Look at me, and I want praise. Anyway, so when you bring up those who authentically have done amazing things despite a you can call it unfair if you want to, although it's like, don't bother. You know, bad circumstances, came from a bad home, terrible parents that didn't even have control themselves, much less be able to exercise control over children, you know, or whatever, you know, abusive, which I think is way overused, way overblown. And when people do it, I say, your excuse needs needs more proof. You know, and you go, how dare you? I should just be able to say that I've been abused and everybody flutters around me and gives me hugs and makes me feel good and exacts vengeance on the people I don't like. And you go, you know, that's whatever. It says that's its own reward. You're not a wonderful person that way. You know, if you're really, really nice to other people and so they're really, really nice back to you, that's just its own reward. And happy day for you, but that may not mean as much as you think it should mean in the larger God economy. Doesn't really buy you that much. I said, you know, what buys you more is, how do you treat people that don't like you? How do you treat those who oppress you? Or some such. How do you treat them? And you go, you know, this is, anyway. So, when you compare authentic people and the people that we like to use are people who have truly overcome things. Helen Keller went from being a deaf mute, which is a horribly nasty and confusing world, to finally being able to access the world in a positive way. And that's what she did. She became Gaia Paragon. She couldn't see and she couldn't hear. She was able to get contacted. Sullivan. Anne Sullivan was the person who finally, it's kind of a sign language with hands that you can feel. Because that was one of the functions that she had left, is she could feel. And so people could communicate to her through feeling. And she educated herself. She certainly got good at Braille so that she could read Braille things, and it's a marvelous miracle. And these are wonderful things that people did to make sure that such people could experience life. There is a portion of money, it's not huge at all. It doesn't require huge amounts of money to do these things. Braille was developed by people. And many books are, it's not really a translation, are rendered, thank you, in Braille. And that way, through touch, the blind people can read. Now, that's not a huge thing now because blind people, if they can hear, most can, so much is now rendered into audiobooks. Almost everything can be an audiobook. The blind can listen to most printed things. The wonderful technology of text-to-speech, so that you don't have to have someone read it to you. That's what an audiobook tends to be. You can have a computer program. This is now called artificial intelligence. We've had it in varying forms for a long time. It used to be called text-to-speech. It wasn't terribly good, for the longest time, but it was adequate. You could understand what had been written to you. For a long time, you've been able to have documents read to you by computers. And what a wonderful thing technology is. These are the things that technology really excels at, is being able to give us this ability and to make it so that these things aren't practically impossible. Anyway, so getting back to Helen Keller, she got to the point to where, technology got to the point to where she could read, she could better herself, and she did. She was on the lecture circuit. You would go around and you would get talked to by things, about things. People would ask you to come, and they'd pay you to come and speak to a group about things, about whatever you were supposedly an expert at. She was just this amazing symbol of overcoming, and she would come and she would talk to people about things, about realizations she had come to. And kind of like the present social media influencer people, got to have something that attracts eyeballs. Back in the day, Helen Keller was an influencer. But, boy, let me tell you, it was for an amazing reason. She was still deaf. And she couldn't hear either. Wait, no, she was deaf and she couldn't see. She was blind and deaf. Blind deaf. These people were called mute. Thought they couldn't function at all in society. You'd lock them up somewhere. Keep them fed. You couldn't talk to them. They didn't understand what was going on. They didn't know what was happening. Anyway... But she became this very accomplished woman. She went through the effort of either teaching herself or having other people help her, which she needed a lot of help from other people, of course. She couldn't take questions from an audience without somebody there being able to sign into her hand what the question was, so she could answer it. She taught herself to speak, which is a Herculean task for somebody who cannot hear themselves. There is a reasonable chance that she said that she could feel the vibrations of things going on around her. I guess if you shouted at her, she could, I really haven't looked at the Helen Keller situation since I was a kid. It was still something that we were taught about in school when I was a kid. I don't know if it's still taught about now. It seems like there isn't enough time for all the other things that they're trying to, virtue signal about now. Helen Keller probably isn't very amazing. It was good because she was put out there as this wonderful person who overcame a lot of problems and became very accomplished. You know, would people have listened to the things that she was saying if she wasn't a deaf mute? Probably not. So there's something to be said for, oh, well, let me tell you, you'll get more attention if you have problems. You go, no, you'll get more attention if you have problems and you overcome them. These days, people say, look at me, look at my problems, or look at me, look at how beautiful I am, and you should forgive me anything else, but you should make me very rich and very smarty so that I can, you know, because I'm special. And you go, you know, said that's where came the term special needs. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, what do we do with that? What do you do with the overcoming of things? How do you make these things come to pass? Anyway, so I've chewed up a lot of time on this, probably more time than really was necessary. 51 minutes, it seems to end up being about an hour. The whole point of this essay, and it's going to be quite short, believe it or not, compared to how I talk about it, is about, it doesn't matter if things are inborn. That doesn't discount the need for you to do something and be something. We shouldn't be asking for lots of excuses. Everybody has to overcome things to become someone worthy of note to Christ and God. I don't believe in unconditional love. I don't believe in these things. I believe God is encouraging, as everyone should be, for people who have troubles, and we all have troubles. Some of them are very conspicuous. Some of them are very, very, very debilitating. Some of us have them, some of us don't. And I'm not trying to speak in the whole mind of fairness. It's not fair. Some people have very charmed lives. I feel like, to a large extent, I'm a person that's led a very charmed life, comparatively speaking. Which comes my whole problem with laziness, that I need to be a good contributor to life, to society. And so there it is. Be consumptive, be productive more than you are consumptive. Produce more than what you take. Too many people finding the ability to do basically nothing and get accolades as if they really did something great. Expect the rewards of amazing ability or good effort, and maybe even get it sometimes. It's all about being famous now. Everybody was so, I think what it came from was, to be honest, kind of the movie star or the media personality. These are people that just had money. And they basically had money for basically being beautiful. everybody touts how amazing, they're just such an amazing actor, and look at this portrayal they did, isn't it amazing? And you go, well, yeah. And you go, but you know what? And most of them will come back and say, I have fun every day. We just have fun putting this stuff together. You know, and I love being an actor because it's easy. It's easy, easy, easy. To a large extent. There's plenty of just workaday people who make money as actors. And I was just listening to something by Tom Wilson, who I really like Tom Wilson. He played Biff in Back to the Future. That is his great claim to fame. He's done a few other things, but they pale completely in comparison to those movies. And he was just this guy. He's just pretty much kind of a regular guy, except that because of this, he has gotten a certain amount of fame. And he talks about it, this thing. He says, I'm famous because of one thing I did when I was really young. It says, and I'm too famous. And he talks about the problems that come from being famous. And anyway, and then he says, and to some extent, I'm not famous enough. It's a really good, you can go and look up Tom Wilson on YouTube and you can watch his thing. It's rather new. It just came out. In fact, I think it just came out this weekend. I follow him. And so he hadn't done something in ages on YouTube, which I don't blame him. Because you usually do stuff on YouTube with the hope that it could be monetized and make enough money to do that. You see other people that seem to be able to do very, very well as a YouTube influencer and making money that way. And, you know, if you're doing it for that purpose and the money doesn't start flowing, you know, you'll tend to do other things instead. Write a book. Do something. Anyway, so for the people who are LGBTQ, which include at least one member of my family, if you are saying that you should have something because you are special, in such and such a way, they try to use all the gravitas that came with Helen Keller and that it should apply to them, even though they really haven't accomplished very much. You know, probably nothing more than being kind of mediocre. We used to study amazing people, and you would want to be amazing people. In high school, it usually fell to sports. You know, you would look at sports icons. The problem is they usually didn't have very good lives. You know, they would be very famous and very popular while they played professional sports, for instance. And a lot of kids, that was what they wanted to do. And that can only last for a certain amount of time before you have to do something else. Either you have to be good at investing the lot of money that you were getting, or looking to improve yourself or better yourself for what was to come. You know, we don't have the need for as many motivational speakers as we have need for professional athletes. So one of the obvious routes to what you should do after, you know, your body's broken because you push that body to the absolute limit. You know, we don't have that many spots for well-paid motivational speakers. You're certainly going to be making less money, that's for sure. It's very rare that you're going to be doing better than that. Anyway, so and that's what really I see from the LGBTQ community. It is, hey, hey, notice me. Please treat me as if I'm oppressed, although my oppression is voluntary. Typically, it's something that you cause to be attached to. I am this. It's like sitting down in a wheelchair and saying, hey, hey, you need to give me the kind of attention and the kind of enhanced respect that a person in a wheelchair gets. And so that's why I don't have, you know, it's like they say, well, you need to treat me like this. Talk to me this way. You need to use these words. You need to do that. And boy, let me tell you, you need to bend over backwards to make sure I'm accommodated in all these ways. And if you don't, oh boy, you need to get pounded. You need to get pounded instead of saying, you know what? It says there's always been effeminate men and masculine women, and, you know, rude people would call them derogatory phrases to try to get them to kind of calm down a little bit. Or, no, it's not even for that. They just do rude things. People can be rude. And we don't treat rude people very nicely either. And you go, you know what you're becoming? You're just becoming a rude person that nobody wants to be around. Says, I don't want to be around you. So, anyway, this essay is yet another thing to say, you need to be a better person. And if you want to be acclaimed as a person who is accomplished, being LGBTQ is not an accomplishment. It's a cop-out. I said, and I'll tell you that. I said, my trying to use autism to try to get myself on disability, it was a cop-out. It failed, thank goodness, and I had to ultimately just do what needed to be done. Am I still lazy? Oh, yeah. You know, at least lazy in the whole thing of, I don't want to have to go off to work. I don't want to have to do all this stuff particularly. It's not, you know, it's just, do I have to do it? Yes. Is it going to get me the money that that I need, my family needs? Yes. Pretty soon I'm going to have pensions and you know, Social Security. And when those things arrive, it's like, well, what are you going to do? It's just, I'm going to stop doing things. And I've already been chastised by a few of the oldsters who, you know, I worked until I was 72 or 73. And you go, well, good for you. And you go, you know, whatever. You got compensated for what you did. Good for you. Happy day. You're rather well healed in retirement when you finally got there. It says, and that's wonderful. Glad to hear it. It's just not interesting to me. And you go, and I'm not looking for the accolades as if I had done it. I said, no. People will say, oh, Nebro, he's a dip, you know. As soon as he could get Social Security, he took it. And then he quit his job. And he did other things instead. You go, yes, because I'm far more interested in da-da-da-da-da-da other things. As long as we can come up, well, anyway, I'm not going to get into that. So, do I respect LGBTQ people? No, not particularly. In fact, the fact that that you pin on that badge and want everybody to know that that's what you are, that is you trying to claim a disability that really isn't a disability. It isn't at all. And we don't have to treat you that way. We don't have to bend over backwards to make sure you feel good. Because you know what? Nobody's bending over backwards to make me feel good. And it's not a fairness thing, I hope. It's just, you shouldn't expect that. And in expecting it, why on earth should we give it to you? It says, I'm not going to give it to you. It says, I know, you know, this is, you're just a regular guy. If you can't make it by doing something that's authentically productive, by doing good, why should I give you that kind of respect that you practically demand? And it's like, boy, I'm not into demanding people. Not at all. I've got other issues, but one of them isn't hopefully being too demanding at all. I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, so I'm going to leave off at this. This is long enough. You've been listening to Cohen Meander. My name is Jason Nemro. Let me leave you with the priestly blessing of my fathers. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift his countenance towards you and give you peace.